I literally had to buy toilet paper for my students. Like, there was nothing.
What is up, everybody? And welcome back to the Schooling Struggle Podcast. It is our belief that the only guarantee in life is that we are all going to struggle. And how we choose to embrace our struggles is what empowers us to become the best versions of ourselves. How's it going? My name is Pete, coming to you from Heartland, Vermont. And with me is my friend and co-host, Todd. What's up, Todd?
What's up, Peter? How's it going? Man,
it's going well. It's going well. Yeah. I'm super fired up for tonight because I shared with you and the listeners a couple episodes ago that I had a couple of different podcast series that I wanted to bring to light.
Indeed.
And one of them is a series called Grounded. And this series is just a really good excuse for me to have conversations with people that I think have a myriad of admirable qualities. And I'm super excited to talk to tonight's guest. Tonight's guest is someone who I feel lives their life incredibly grounded. And I've learned so much from this individual. And I'm excited to just kind of get into a conversation and pick her brain about how she goes about her day, her life, and navigating her challenges. So with that said, tonight's guest is Heather Pogue. What's up, Heather?
What's up, Mr. D?
Thank you so much for making the time to hang out with us this evening. We're super grateful.
I'm honored. It's my pleasure.
So as we get into tonight's conversation, and there's a bunch of stuff that I want to pick your brain about, because I do view you as an incredibly grounded person. The way you navigate your life is really inspirational to me. It's really cool. I'm excited to pick your brain about it. But before we get into that, I would love for you to share with us anything that you think would be helpful for the listeners to know about you to kind of set the stage for our conversation this evening.
Well, I know you as a fellow teacher. I guess the quick version of my backstory is that I grew up here in Queechy, Vermont on a beef farm. I have a twin brother whom you know very well. I took some time off before I went to college, and that, you know, through many twists and turns, landed me eventually in Chicago, where I went to the University of Chicago, and that then led into becoming a teacher. I did a master's program in Chicago for urban teachers called the Urban Teacher Education Program, which was actually, I was in the second cohort. It was like a brand new thing. And so that led right into teaching in Chicago public schools for almost 10 years. And then during college, I met my eventual husband through an art form that we both practiced together called capoeira, which is an Afro-Brazilian martial art. And I became a teacher there. That was 10 years of a lot of struggle. A lot of struggle teaching there.
Teaching in inner city Chicago.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring
yeah.
to?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I taught in two of the most dangerous neighborhoods in Chicago on the south and west side. And so, I mean, just struggle everywhere. Like these children come to school with so much on their plates and so much trauma. And so that was really, I wouldn't give up that experience for the world. It taught me so much about myself, about the world, about this country, but it took its toll on me. And at the same time, I had, what was it? My second year of teaching, I got pregnant with what turned out to be twins. So I am a twin and I had twins. And that was a lot. Raising twins is a lot. My husband was the most incredible stay-at-home father for 5 years and just has so much to do with them being incredible people. So then after about 10 years, we ended up moving back to Vermont, which I never thought I would do. But I was offered a position at Heartland Elementary with working in the same school as my twin brother. So that was just an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And my husband was on board for the life-changing leap of moving from Chicago to Vermont.
So your husband was born and raised in Chicago.
Born and raised in Chicago. Yeah. He is a black man. His parents were born and raised in Mississippi, moved to Chicago, you know, as part of sort of the Great Migration. And here he is in Vermont, making his way. He's a DJ. He's an incredible, really incredible DJ and incredible father. And we've been now in Heartland for, this is my 9th year teaching here. So I've almost been teaching as long here as I taught in Chicago.
Oh, nuts. Yeah. So in full disclosure, Heather and I were colleagues for a number of years before I made my move over to high school.
Yeah.
And Heather is currently my daughter's teacher. And I couldn't be more grateful. I'm super, super psyched. I was going to joke with you and say that the real reason why I brought you on is because my daughter seems to carry herself well during the school day, but not so much at home. And I was going to ask you to come on and give me disciplining and parenting tips for my daughter. But I was going to spring that on you as a joke when we first started. But yeah, you're just absolutely crushing it.
So the running joke with me, with classroom discipline, like classroom management, is that 90% of classroom discipline for me is my eyebrow, because I can do, people can't see this, but you can. It's that right there.
Give the eyebrow. That's all.
Give the eyebrow. Yeah.
Good, good. That's awesome. Is there anything as far as hobbies or anything that what I like to ask people is, what do you love to do when you don't have to do anything?
Well, for a long time, Cupwater was the thing that I would do always. And when we moved here, we had a large Cupwater group in Chicago that was basically our family as well. When we moved here, there was really no one doing Cupwater. So we started a small group and taught for a while, and COVID kind of shut that down. And I just haven't had the bandwidth to start up again. But that's something that I'm really passionate about, and that I think is something I really enjoy doing.
I've seen you and your yeah. crew and your husband do it, and I wouldn't be able to describe it as well as you could. So what is capoeira, your love for human movement?
So capoeira is an Afro-Brazilian martial art. It was developed by enslaved Africans in Brazil. Brazil has a extremely long, even longer than the U.S., and brutal history of chattel slavery. And so it was developed by enslaved Africans who brought their, you know, culture with them. And so it is done to music. There are instruments that are used, drums and percussion instruments. It's singing is a huge part of it. There's call and response songs, tell history that, you know, joke around, that inform the way that people move, that make commentary, that, you know, all sorts of things. It's done in a circle, and there's two players in the middle who are basically sparring. The verb they use is play, to play. And because of its origins, it weaves in and out of being playful and being combative and deadly. So as you can imagine, people who are enslaved were not allowed to just practice a martial art and learn how to defend themselves. And as they were, you know, practicing these ways to be able to defend themselves and, you know, eventually earn freedom, they would have to disguise it in dance and music. So that's a part of it. It also just, you know, if you look in Africa, there's a lot of very similar traditions that were clearly, you know, at the roots. So
Todd knows this about me, but I'm just so fascinated to learn about subcultures of which I know nothing about. And it's just, yeah. It's really, really cool to have a conversation with someone who has a passion for something that, you know, yeah. I know nothing about. What yeah. you got, Todd?
How's it going, Heather?
Great.
Yeah, fantastic. You talked about, if anything is ever off subject, just say, I don't want to talk about it. You talked about 10 years in public school in Chicago, which I can only imagine. You said that the trauma for the kids and for being a teacher in that environment had a toll on you. And I was interested to know what exact toll did that trauma take?
Well, there was like the day-to-day struggle of people who are living in fear in what's basically a war zone, in deep poverty. I mean, if you look at Chicago, the history of systemic racism plays out on the map. And when you are, when you're there, you can see how that plays out in people's lives. I was working in communities where there were very little access to real food. There was, you know, very few job prospects without taking 6 buses, so many different things as a result of redlining laws and
what are redlining laws?
So redlining were laws that dictated who banks would give loans to. And so specifically African Americans were not allowed to get loans within certain areas that were defined on the map as, you know, outlined in red, sort of like, so don't lend to people in this neighborhood. And so what happened is people that obviously severely, you know, oppressed people's economic opportunities within those areas. And so that plays out in so many different ways. So you have these areas like on the south side of Chicago where people have very little access to like real food. Like the only food that these kids can get and families can get to is like the convenience store that has just packaged food, and that's it. No fresh food, no really healthy. And, you know, so that's had an impact over time. And so you end up with these really, as Chicago is, like just very segregated, both racially and socioeconomically. And so plays on itself, and then you get all the challenges that areas of extreme poverty have. So, you know, I mean, there was the daily challenges of having students come who didn't have food, didn't have access to food, were dealing with all kinds of things at home, regular shootings, family members, and drive-by shootings on the street and stuff like that, right? So just like dealing with children who themselves in their life have been severely impacted by trauma.
Yeah.
And then the system, the Chicago public schools, their motto is children first.
I've heard this before.
It is not that.
Yeah.
And at the time it was right after No Child Left Behind. And so there was, they're still dealing with the fallout from that. But there was this extremely heavy emphasis on standardized testing, you know, and you had to, you know, score a certain level, and they literally tied like your school's everything to it. Like they were shutting down schools based on how you scored. So the pressure on teachers and students to have these kids who, you know, when you're dealing with trauma, like you're not able to
learning is not my key focus.
Learn your best and to perform your best. Like no one can do their best at anything when they're dealing with like, am I safe? You know, is my family safe? Will I be able to eat? Like your basic needs.
Yeah.
And so.
Would you say that the trauma that you feel it imposed on you, or being in that swirling pot of all of those different things you just talked about, in my mind, I want to think like, what would that be like for me to go into somewhere like that and like check myself and like, I've noticed all these things. I've been to school, like I'm here to teach, but now I can't. Like, did it take a toll from you in the way that you felt like maybe muzzled, or you weren't able to be effective in the role you were in? Or was it just the turmoil of experiencing all of this stuff together? And then here you are, a teacher in the middle of it, right?
I mean, I've always been someone who kind of rose to the challenge. And so what it ended up doing for me personally is it was like I had to like focus on the present moment and the next thing. Like it made it very difficult to see down the road and to like, you know, make plans and to think. It was like, get through this day, get through this hour, right? Get through this day, get through this week.
Yeah.
And so that, for 10 years, plus then, you know, I had twins. So it was like, I go home and they're, you know, and they're wonderful. They were the best. And they, you know, having children shifted my perspective on being a teacher as well in a way that I appreciate. But yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. Sounds
and
like it.
Though, you know, I worked with just some of the most incredible people. And I think the experience for me, I grew up in Vermont, like this is the whitest place ever. And so living and working in an area where I was regularly the only white person or one of very few white people around was an excellent experience for me and one that I really appreciate.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
So I have two questions, but I would love, I think wasn't something that's interesting about working in schools is that the large majority, if not everyone, has had an experience with school. Like they have their paradigm yeah. on what school is, what school should be based on their experience. And yeah. I'd be curious if you'd be willing to, in specific detail, like take us into a classroom in Chicago and what that looks like. Because I grew up in Massachusetts, now I teach in Vermont, and that's my paradigm of what a classroom looks like. Could yeah. you just...
I mean,
no detail is too small, like the number of kids or the size of the room. Like if you were to walk into one of your classrooms there, what would the environment look like?
So, I mean, first of all, Chicago Public Schools is like 600 schools. Like it's behemoth. And, you know, spread out throughout the city, which itself is diverse in so many different ways. So I worked in two schools predominantly. I did some work in other schools, but like, you know, when I was a teacher teaching my own classroom, I was in schools that were basically 100% African American, basically 100% free and reduced lunch. And so that's a specific experience in Chicago. For example, my children went to a school. They have the system there is confusing, right? So one of the things they have is magnet schools that, you know, take kids from all over the city, but you have to enter a lottery system to get into it. So our kids got into a magnet school that was on the north side that was in a pretty wealthy area that was a pretty like racially diverse school and that was a Montessori school. And because of the neighborhood that was in, that school received a ton of funding from the parents. So they're like the things that their school had was a completely different world yeah. right. from the school that I was teaching at on the south side, where I literally had to buy toilet paper for my students. Like there was nothing, you know, there was nothing. And, you know, I spent an absurd amount of my own money just to have things to teach with and food for children, like snacks so they can eat something so they can actually like be present, you know, where that was not my children's experience in their school, but it's all within the same system. The yeah. inequities are vast.
To say the least.
I mean, like I was saying, there was a ton of pressure in my school because you know, there was always this threat of being shut down, right? It was always looming. So the pressure around standardized assessments and testing, like there was so many things that the school did around that in hindsight now I'm like that. And even at the time I was like, this doesn't feel right at all, but here we are. It's like what we're doing, you know? Yeah. And I mean, basically the entire time from Christmas time, you know, holiday time to they took their standardized test in like early March, like basically all of January and all of February was like hardcore test prep. Like that was all we did.
What grades were you teaching?
Fourth and fifth grade mostly. Yeah.
So test prep, 2 months of test prep for fourth and fifth graders yeah. was a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not healthy. I hesitate to talk too much about some of my experiences there, because if you don't really understand the context of it, and I feel like especially as white people out like who don't understand the specific context of the south side of Chicago and the experience of black people living in poverty there, I can tell stories of things that were like opened my eyes but people aren't going to interpret it the right way, you know, especially when I moved to Heartland, and like it was such a vast difference in terms of mm-hmm. support and just and like support with personnel, with people, with, I mean, you mentioned class size, like in Chicago, my highest class was 36, and that was wow. split fourth and fifth graders in one class. And there was no aides. There was no, support. There was no, like, it was just me. It was me and 36 kids. Like, that was it. Here, I remember my first class when I came here, I was teaching first grade, and I had 16 kids. And I was like, where's the other half of my class? Where are the rest of the kids?
Welcome to Vermont.
I know. So, and there was like someone to help, like, you know, para support. And I still to this day probably don't use the supports as well as I could because I'm just used to doing it on my own.
So in kind of in line with this series on Grounded, what I want to chat with you about tonight is whether it's a challenge that you had back in your 10 years in Chicago or whether it's, you know, currently in whatever facet of your life you want to discuss, you just strike me as someone who is very comfortable in your own skin and takes the challenges that life brings about with grace and with a demeanor that's calm and you take it in stride. And I really, really admire that about you. So I guess we're going to pivot the conversation to when it comes to you, Heather, and I know that you're a listener of the podcast, so you kind of, you know, our goal here is to talk about how we navigate the challenges and struggles in our life.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what you did or what you've learned about yourself and what you do to really navigate through those struggles. And that can be tactical stuff that you did every day or that you do every day.
Yeah.
Or some theoretical stuff that you learned about that over time you put into practice in your life.
I mean, at the time that I was working in Chicago, like music was really helpful. I had like certain songs and albums that I would listen to on the way to school that would just like get me in the mindset for it.
What type of music were you listening to?
You know, Mr. D's hip hop.
Heather and I connected very early over our love for mid-90s, the golden era of hip hop, the mid-90s hip hop.
Sidebar, my children are now like listening to 90s hip hop and it's just like, it feels so good.
That's a tribute to your parenting skills, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, and my husband, who's like truly the music he's aficionado the DJ, right? In the house. Yeah.
He's the DJ, I'm the rapper.
Yeah, that's amazing. So music was
the music, yeah, music was a huge,
that helped you.
Huge piece. I mean, when I had my children, which like I said was my second, I guess I had them my third year of teaching. I mean, that just shifted my perspective. It was like get through the day. And then, you know, it helped me to turn it off where before, I mean, I'd be at school till 7 p.m., you know, doing all the things because schooling never ends. Like there's always more to do. And so when I had my daughters, it made it much easier for me to go, okay, I'm leaving this space now and I'm going to leave it here and I'm going to go home and be present with my kids.
So the ability to compartmentalize.
Like, yeah, I had
when I'm
to.
At school, I just, yeah.
Yeah, I had to. And then in 2012, I was in a car accident that caused some lingering lower back pain. And so I ended up going to a chiropractor and, you know, she kept realigning me and it'd be great for a week or two and then I'd be back, you know. And finally she said, look, until you rebuild your core muscles, which when you carry twins, 39 weeks was blown, gone, annihilated. She said, you're just not going to hold you're not going to hold the adjustment. So she recommended that I do yoga and I'd never done yoga before. So I ended up, you know, finding a local place and that really truly was life changing and probably life saving, honestly.
In
like
what regard?
There were, it was so much getting through the stress of the day that, I mean, there were days that I would get in my car to leave work or sometimes even to go to work. And I would just imagine just driving and like, just keep going. Like I never did, obviously, but like, that's how much stress I was holding inside. And so yoga it regrounded me in my body. Grew up doing sports and gymnastics. And then, you know, in college, I found capoeira, which is like gotten by far the best shape of my life doing capoeira. And then I had children like I said, I carried twins full term, and that just changed my body completely. Plus, I was teaching full time and, you know, raising infant twins, which is a lot. So as you can imagine, like my physical health and fitness, like took the back burner. It wasn't until I got in a car accident, I was like, oh, I really need to like do some work on my body to get it back. And so then I started doing yoga maybe, you know, 3 or 4 times a week on the way home from work. And that really changed things for me. It both rebuilt my body kind of from the inside out. Cause before that I kept trying to do Capoeira, but I kept being like, I'm going to hurt. Like I just knew I was going to hurt myself because my body wasn't, my core was gone. And so it helped me rebuild from the inside out. And it also just made me realize like the importance of breath and like going inside and like realizing that that's always there. Like that tool of breathing and like going inside myself is always there. Like you can take it anywhere. Like that's just become one of the things I use all the time. You know, I mean, as a teacher, as a mom, anytime I feel like, okay, I need to like recenter myself, I'll just stop and breathe deep and, you know, open my chest, you know, do like maybe a hip opener or something just to center myself.
So will you use that practice in like different environments? Like, can you do that while you're driving? Can you do that sitting in a chair at a desk? Or do you need like space to like do it on the ground?
To breathe? Bro.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
You can do it anywhere.
So no. I'm asking you, speaking, I guess technically speaking, when and where do you find yourself accessing that? Like, do you...
Yoga specifically or breath work?
Breath work.
Anytime. I mean, literally anytime. Like, I can be in the classroom and I, as soon as I notice, like, Heather, you need to calm down, or like, this is, you know, the energy, right? is going up.
Temperature's rising.
Temperature's rising. Then it's like, okay, I can't help these people if I'm out of control. So let me stop and take some breaths. And let me tell you,
like a 30-second thing or a minute long thing.
When students see you stop and intentionally breathe, they notice.
Do you do it with or without the eyebrow?
Yeah. Oh, oftentimes. Sometimes I take my, I'm wearing contacts right now, but like, you know, you pull the glasses off and put them down. But honestly, a lot of times I do it and nobody even notices. It's just to like, you know, breathe in deep, hold it for a second, breathe out slower than I breathed in. Like just especially controlling that out breath.
So the exhale is longer than the inhale.
Yeah.
I'm asking these questions because I'm teaching a new class this semester called Better Than Yesterday. And a big part of what we're doing each day is breath work.
Yeah.
And I want my students to learn, and many of them do listen to this podcast. I want them to learn that there's not one right way to do this thing. Because when I first heard about breath work, I was like, oh, I got to make sure I do it right. I'm not doing it right. It was the same for me with meditation. And I've come around to the fact that meditation is just spending time with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and the term meditation is really frightening and scary for a lot of people, but it's no, you're just making time to be with yourself, and breath work can be that too. Yeah. And what I need to remind myself and the students I'm teaching is you can apply that anytime, anywhere. So like for 30 seconds in the midst of crisis, you can apply it. Or Todd has challenged me to drive to school every day with no sound. And I'd like do my breath work while I'm driving.
How's that going for you, Pete?
I have 68 more days of school and I can't wait till it's done. I got in the car this morning. Yesterday, my daughter asked me, Daddy, how many more days of school? I said, I don't know. So we pulled out the calendar and it was 68. And I got in the car this morning and said, Todd, 68 more days I have to drive to school in silence.
I have a question about this because you talked about this on the last podcast.
Yeah.
Or not the last one, but a previous one. Why does it have to be when you drive to school? And my question is, this is my thinking, right? So as I remember, you said you wanted to spend time just quiet by yourself, right? And so you chose this time driving to school.
Todd suggested it and I agreed.
And you agreed. Okay.
Yep.
But what you said was that normally you listen to music, right?
Correct.
And that, and you miss that, right?
Correct.
And so my reaction to that is, why can't you do it at some other time in the day? Because if listening to music serves you, and feeds you going to work, then no amount of sitting quietly by yourself is going to feed you in the same way.
I agree with you 100%. And I think as humans, our greatest strength is often our greatest weakness. And one of those for me is deciding to set a goal and stay with it.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes why we start something does not end up being the reason why we continue to do it.
Yeah. And I get that.
And I think that if I stay with it, a breakthrough could happen. And I want to give myself a school year to see if that breakthrough happens. And cool. That's why. So
yeah. I admire that about you, by the way, because that's something that is challenging for me. Like, yeah. I think the other side of that coin is like what I'm coming at you with, which is like reflect on yourself. And if it's not serving you, like maybe it doesn't mean don't do it and that you can't find like a breakthrough in doing that. But maybe you need to tweak where that is in your day or how that manifests so that it's, you know what
Peter's
I mean?
Peter's probably one of the most ritualistic humans I've ever met. And I think that he figures like I've allotted this amount, you correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, but I've allotted this time of the day to do this thing that somebody said might help me. And I'll be damned if that's going to end before my window is up. And I only have this much time, but.
And I'm like the opposite where I'm like, I probably should find some ritual in my day. Cause free floating through.
Yeah. So oftentimes people will make suggestions that I think make a heck of a lot more sense than what I'm doing. But because I've committed to doing this thing, I'm gonna see it through.
See it through. Yeah.
And often that's to my detriment. Yep. I finish up every book that I start.
That's so funny. I have books in front of me that I have started and not finished.
So I was told that a really good time to pull the plug on a book is 100 minus your age. When you get to that page, if you're not enjoying the book, get out.
Interesting.
And yeah, I just have a hard time. Like I there's just little things like that where I just get in my own way.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. But yeah. And so that's why I just think that's an example of, I think, where you're more in touch with yourself and you're more grounded with who you are.
Yeah.
That I can learn from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there's a happy medium, right? Isn't that the goal? That like, maybe.
Hard to find sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I had a thought. Are you familiar with the Huberman podcast?
Yes. No. He is amazing. He's a neuroscientist.
Oh my God.
He's incredible.
So I was listening to one of his episodes the other day and he was talking about, I guess he did some experiment or something where people were doing different things to see what like reduced their stress the most. Like bang for your buck, basically, like the most stress reduction for the least amount of effort, work, time, etc. And the thing that they found was the most effective was, I can't remember, there's some specific name for it, but basically it's sighing. It's like you take a breath in to the top and then you take a little bit more breath and then you let it out. It is like supposed to be the most stress reduction for your body. Huh,
that's fascinating to learn. I sigh all the time. I don't like commit to like 5 minutes of sighing, but I'll definitely catch myself huge in with the nose. But for me, where I
but
miss
it's
out
let
is
the, out the, too though. It's not just the
that's
in,
the biggest part.
It's
yeah,
it's the, yeah.
I tend to feel the chest, and I don't go all the way to the diaphragm, and that's a place where. Yeah, Huberman's podcast is great because it's like bang for the buck for everything that he talks about. Like, what's
is it the Huberman Lab? Is that the one?
Yeah.
He's a researcher out of Stanford University, I believe.
Aren't they so interesting?
Yeah, he has full-length podcasts that are long, like long form, but then he also has a lot of cuts and clips that are like 10 minutes-ish on YouTube, which are great. And he talks a lot about vitality, and I'm fascinated by, now that I'm in my mid-40s, like what do I have to do now so I can kick butt into my 90s?
Yeah.
And what can I do now to have a high level of vitality and functionality in my later years? And he talks quite a bit about that stuff too.
That's cool.
Peter Attashi is another one that's a really, really good listen to when it comes to that stuff.
Nice.
So So Heather, prior to the episode, I sent you a list of just different topics that I'd be curious to chat with you about. I didn't know if there was anything on there that was pertinent to you that you wanted to share in chatting tonight.
I mean, so I talked about yoga and breath work, but also time with family and like my like inner circle of friends. That is something that I find when I'm struggling or when I'm just feeling like unaligned, you know, I have like certain people that I am either texting with or calling my friend and being like, we need to spend like 2 hours. And those people really help center me. There, it's like this small group of people who I feel like almost know me better than I know myself. So they can help kind of bring me back to me when I start to lose myself.
So is the tactical piece there not finding time for that, but making time for that?
Yeah.
And is any of that set up like proactively, like you meet once a week, or you have something set up that's kind of always in place? My ritualistic mindset. Or is it more like, let's see if we can get together when we need to get together?
It's always been more on a need to basis. I mean, one thing that I've learned about myself is that I have to, like, you know, with appointments or anything, like I have to make the next one at this one, because if I have to make it randomly, it's not going to happen. So we do try to kind of set up the next thing, but it's also happens on the fly. Like, I think there's a core group of my friends who, you know, we're on a group chat together and, you know, or we're texting each other individually, and they're just the people that you can go deep with really quickly. You know, when they say, how are you doing? If most people, you know, asked, you'd be like, oh, I'm fine. You know, but with them, you'd be like, you know, I'm really struggling today, or I'm noticing I'm doing this thing that I now know that I do that doesn't serve me. You know, it's like you can get right to it. And then we've learned to kind of coach each other through stuff and how to, you know, be like, okay, well, do you need to drink water? Like, do you need to go for a walk? Do you need to, you know, do you need to an actual phone call to talk this through and just have somebody listen? That's helped me a ton.
That's awesome.
I dropped a link in the chat. It's something that somebody shared with me at work. It's about these different communication types. It's the weavers and the concluders. I bet you read that, Heather, you'd be like, yes, exactly.
I'll ask Todd to put that in the show notes for this episode.
Awesome.
So Heather, as a listener of the show, you know that finding tactical pieces that people can take from the episode and try to apply to their lives is one of our goals. And what I've heard from our conversation is that some of the ways that you navigate your struggle is through music, through physical activity, whether it's yoga or capoeira, through connecting with people that you hold most dear or people that you value, through breath work. Is there any stuff in regard to mindset that you actively implement or that you find yourself utilizing in a helpful manner?
Yeah. I mean, I've done some like regular practice around gratitude that has definitely made a difference. I don't always do it all the time. I sort of go through phases, but it's definitely helped me through some hard times. And I feel like I pull stuff like that in when I notice that I'm avoiding it. I'm usually avoiding it because I'm ungrounded or I'm dealing with something that it's like, I know it's there, but I'm like not ready to face it. So that's when I try to pull in more ritual things, like writing down, you know, 3 things I'm grateful for every morning or every night, or let's see, tactical pieces. Yoga. I mean, I do, one of my close couple of friends now lives in Brazil and has become a yoga teacher and teaches over Zoom. And so I do her class every Wednesday, no matter what,
That's
and
awesome.
That really, I have come to find that is just incredibly grounding. Like, I need to do that. And if I don't, like, over the fall, I was doing a graduate class that coincided with that. And so I couldn't do it for maybe 2 months in a row. And it was the first time in probably 2 years that I'd gone that length of time without doing that class. And I also wasn't doing a whole lot of other yoga outside of that. And I just really noticed by the end how much I was just floundering in myself. Mm. Everything was kind of a struggle, but mostly it was just this feeling of not being connected to myself. And like, then what happens is I stay up too late. I, you know, scroll too long on my phone, or I'm like not planning healthy meals. You're just eating a struggle meal. It's like those things compound, right? Which then make you feel worse because you're not, you know, you're not well slept and you're not feeding your body nutrients. And so I realized that that class in particular, but also just the regular practice of yoga, like grounds me. It's like a keystone habit for me. Like it grounds me in other things that then make me feel better and make me more functional in general.
That's awesome. I was talking to someone who I really trust prior to getting married. And then I talked to that person again prior to having a child. And the person reminded me, they said, you know, I'm not going to give you any life advice, but one thing I will tell you that works for me is decide what your non-negotiables are, those healthy things that you need to be the best version of you, mm-hmm. and give up everything else.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing you say like this Wednesday yoga, like this has to happen for me to be my best self. And I can give up other stuff, but I'm not going to give up this. Yeah. And that was really helpful for me because I've learned that meditating is really challenging for me, but basically my meditation is working out. And I was like, I'm going to find a way, even though I'm now entering into this marriage, even though I'm entering into this parenthood thing, I'm going to find a way to make sure that I can keep that practice. And I'll give up driving back to Massachusetts every weekend to be with my buddies or whatever, all these other things. I'll give those things up, but I have to decide what my non-negotiable is and stay true to that. And that's been super helpful for me.
Yeah.
I think that's another tactical piece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything from T Sparkle, Todd Ellis?
No, I'm always so interested. I could talk all day long to people who talk about the same things that I'm interested in, obviously, but I think that.
Likewise.
Yeah. I think it's awesome that I can't remember exactly how you said it, Heather, but it was something along the lines of, I already have everything I need. Like I know what to do to reset, you know, and I really love the point you put on it with, I'm making the example, I'm going to take my glasses off and these kids are going to pay attention to what's going on over there because suddenly I'm quiet and I'm doing something different. And I think that's the most tactical pieces are the pieces that we put in the way intentionally where people are like, oh, this is something different and you need to reset. And I could do that too. I think those are the best ones for our, I don't know if it's our listeners or whatever, but those are the ones that always make the most difference to me is, you know, it seems very simple in design. It's hard to do, but when you see somebody do it, you know immediately what they're talking about.
Right.
So I do like that, but. Yeah, I could talk mindfulness and breath work and all that all day long. And I do love that Peter still does it on the way to work secretly.
This is why I love having this podcast because I can say to someone, hey, I really want to learn a lot from you. And instead of just saying, hey, can I call you one night? We can have an hour long conversation. I can say, hey, can you come on to the podcast? People are like, yeah, I guess I'll do that. So, man, we are so, so grateful for your time, Heather. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. I have to say, one of my favorite things is conversing with you, Pete. Like I've always really enjoyed conversations with you, whether it was like school pickup or in the hallway or after a CrossFit workout or something like you. I always take something from my conversations with you. I think we're similar but different in enough ways that I feel like it always pushes my thinking or makes me think about something from just a different angle that I, you know, would not have. But we also have enough things that we connect on that I really appreciate it. Yeah.
That means a lot to me. And in many ways, I feel that you've made me a better person in that as a cisgendered, white, upper middle class male, there's a lot of stuff in this world that I have no clue about and I'm just ignorant. And you've enlightened me and taught me and called me out on some things that would make me a better person. And those aren't easy things to do with friends often. And each time that you've helped me along that route, I'm just so grateful. So you make the people around you better. You are an incredible, incredible teacher to my daughter and her classmates. And I just see you as one of the most grounded people I know. So thank you so much for making episode one of the Grounded series a shining success. We really appreciate your thoughts and your sharing.
It's been my pleasure.
On behalf of Heather Pogue, Todd Ellis, and myself, we are the School and Struggle Podcast. We are out.
See ya.